You're listening to The Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates. Online at thelibertybeat.com. John Bush here with your Liberty Beat for February 6th, 2013. Gold opened today at $1,676, silver at $31.89, and Bitcoin is trading at $20.92. Today's edition of the Liberty Beat is sponsored by Central Texas Gunworks, specializing in handgun defense training, concealed handgun courses, and firearm sales. Online at CentralTexasGunworks.com. And now the news. Uncomfortable with the Obama administration's use of deadly drones, a growing number in Congress is looking to limit America's authority to kill suspected terrorists, even U.S. citizens. The Democratic-led outcry was emboldened by the revelation in a newly surfaced Justice Department memo that shows drones can strike against a wider range of threats with less evidence than previously believed. The drone program, which has been used from Pakistan across the Middle East and into North Africa to find and kill an unknown number of suspected terrorists, is expected to be a topic of debate when the Senate Intelligence Committee grills John Brennan, the White House's pick for CIA chief, at a hearing Thursday. Too much drama? Boredom and scads of irrelevant information are just some of the reasons Facebook users give for taking a break from the world's biggest social networking site for weeks at a time, according to a new study. A report from the Pew Research Center's Internet in America Life Project found that some 61% of Facebook users had taken a hiatus of at least several weeks for myriad of reasons, whether they were wary from an onslaught of gossip or, for the more pious, the arrival of Lent. Yet the use of Facebook, whether constant or not, is pervasive in America. Of the American adults who use the Internet, 67% are on Facebook, Pew found. That compares with 20% who use LinkedIn and 16% who are on Twitter. Charlottesville, Virginia has become the first city in the United States to formally pass an anti-drone resolution. The resolution passed by a 3-2 vote and was brought to the city council by activist David Swanson and the Rutherford Institute, a civil liberties group based in the city. The measure also endorses a proposed 2-year moratorium on drones in Virginia. Personal information of some 4,000 people in the banking industry, including bank officers, was posted online Sunday by the hacker collective Anonymous. The list was initially posted to the website for the Alabama Criminal Justice Information Center, then apparently taken down by that site's operators. The ACJIC did not respond to a request for comment about the incident. However, the list was also posted elsewhere online and remains available through Google's WebCache. The Liberty Beat is sponsored in part by Sovereign Living, illuminating your path to self-sufficiency. Online at SovereignLiving.tv, and by Brave New Books, specializing in free-thinking material for free people since 2006. Online at BraveNewBookstore.com.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Great to have your company today. And for the second hour of today's show, we have a very, very unusual guest on the line. And we're going to be talking about a subject which is a difficult one, and one which is perhaps going to cause some troubles for myself, because we are treading into areas that are subject to heavy censorship in Australia. But it is something that I feel is essential, something that has to be done, and I'm not prepared to bow down and cringe before the powers that be simply because they have decided to make certain topics a no-go area. So we are going to be talking today about the Jewish question, and I'm talking about in the broadest sense. I'm talking about issues to do with racism, and I'm talking about racism not against Jews, but I'm talking about racism that Jews have practiced towards those who question the policies of Israel and the attitudes of many people who are classed or classified as Jewish in our society. And I make no apologies for that. This is a subject that needs to be discussed. And I certainly would like at the outset to make it very clear that that I have absolutely no interest in racial vilification. I absolutely no interest in it whatsoever. To me, all human beings are created equal, and I regard all human beings as potentially my friends or potentially my enemies simply based on their behaviour, on how they treat me. And many, many people, some of my greatest heroes are Jewish people. Some of my greatest, like, musicians, songwriters, you know, scientists. There have been so many great Jews in history that have done great things. So, you know, let's get this clear. I don't have any problem with Jews per se, but there is something going on in our society and around the world with a kind of a cabal, and I would call it a cabal of people who use the cloak of Jewishness, Judaism, Zionism, to somewhat enable themselves, to give themselves power and to actually make themselves unassailable, because anytime they're criticised, it's like, oh, you're an anti-Semite, so shut up, you can't say anything. And this is actually just a weapon. It's a very, very dangerous weapon. So today we're going to be addressing this problem. And I have on my show today my guest, Brendan O'Connell, who is perhaps Australia's first political prisoner, in the sense that he has gone to prison for 3 years for criticising Jews. And I've looked at the documents and I've looked at what he was convicted under, the terms of the legislation he was convicted under, and what he actually did. And I have to say, I'm pretty gobsmacked. I'm pretty amazed that this actually even happened. So with that as my introduction, I'd just like to say now, welcome to the show, Brendan O'Connell.
Hey, thanks, Herod. Great to be here, mate. Cheers. And thanks for taking that stand on a freedom of expression. It's really important.
Well, it is. And it's also very important for people to understand and not be bamboozled by the rhetoric of racial vilification, because a lot of people really don't get it, because they trust the media, they trust the way things are represented, and so when someone is accused of doing what you allegedly did, they probably think you're a terrible person. But I've actually looked at the material, I've looked at what you said in your YouTube videos, and although I think you were a little heavy-handed, and I think you could have been nicer, and I think I would actually recommend being a little softer with these people. But that's beside the point, because you didn't do anything that I would construe to be criminal, and so the fact that you went to prison, to me, is itself a crime. Just to get your response to that.
Well, look, I agree. Look. We have to separate the issue into a criminal matter and a social, ethical and moral sort of matter. You're right. Of course, I could have done things better. Of course, I should have been more calmer with Stanley Keizer and said, look, Stanley, let's sit down. Let's have a dialogue, please. Let's sit down with the Friends of Palestine, who I might add I was not a member of. I could have done things better. And I was 39 years old at the stage. He was 21, although he was a very mature and professional activist himself, and they had portrayed him almost as a child.
Yeah.
I should have done better, and there's behaviour online that I'm utterly ashamed of. But the point was, and you've said it very well, Hayward, was who was the victim here? Do we attempt to crush a walnut with an M1 Abrams main battle tank? And that's exactly what happened. And I think the video speaks for themselves, and I hope now, with the extra publicity to do with Jewish racial and religious supremacism, the death of the rabbi for all Jews, Rabbi Avadia Yosef, and his horrendous record of vilifying other people and other races and religions, that people are waking up to my comments online, which I admit to the neophyte or someone who wasn't familiar with the issues, would sound, you know, when I say your days are numbered or the bell's tolled for you, that you could almost call them inflammatory in tone, unless you know the issues and you would understand why emotions come to the surface so readily. Because as you've said in your introduction, it's such a difficult subject to broach, and we're all so sick and tired of having perfectly reasonable concerns and being labelled anti-Semites or conspiracy theorists and wackos and nutjobs. And we're tired of it. And that's where my emotions came from that day. I was really sick of it.
Absolutely.
And the fact that he was photographing us and photographing the Palestinian activists, and he was there to deliberately agitate, and that's why I got so angry.
Can we just actually go through the events of that day that led to your being imprisoned, because some of our listeners won't be familiar with it. Can you just go through the specific events that led to you being charged under racial vilification laws?
Well, initially there were. Are you talking about just the start of the day, or the actual when the charges were first laid?
Well, maybe just run through the narrative from the beginning at whatever point you think is appropriate to begin.
It was a Saturday morning. I'd heard about these protests. Now, strangely enough, that morning I actually woke up and I was drifting a little and wondering what I was going to do with the rest of my life, because I'd been a former registered nurse. I'd worked in ICUs, emergency departments. I was very bitter about the health department and corruption and frustration. And I'd been drifting for a while, and I'd come into certain Jewish issues, issues of Jewish power, supremacism and so on and so forth, matters of history and so on. And I'm a student of history, and I find it fascinating, and I don't like people abusing power. And that's how I got slowly into these issues. And that morning I wasn't even going to go, because I was very angry with the Middle East and the way the general Arab community had handled things. I mean, I know they're under pressure, but the use of the gun, it was hopeless, why they hadn't done videos and so on and so forth. And I was really wondering that morning whether I should bother. But I got up and rushed out in the end. None of this was planned, nothing. Some people said, oh, you had a script. I had no script. I knew nothing of what I was going to do, what I was going to say. I just turned the camera on, and I turned up there. I saw Alex Wisson there, the head of the Friends of Palestine. He'd heard about me. He asked if I could help, and I said, fine, but I was a little bit reticent about joining anything because, I don't have a lot of patience, unfortunately, and I didn't want to have to. And then I'd seen him and his friend. They were photographing. I thought they were part of the group. They then created an altercation where they photographed us and deliberately agitated. I caught up with him. I didn't pursue him or run after him. The video speaks for itself. He was there stalking us. The comments were made. I called him a racist Jew. You have a religion of racism, hate, homicide, and ethnic cleansing. Every statement I made was based in fact, whether that upset him or not. It was a statement of fact. And you see the video speaks for itself. Again, I could have been nicer, we could say that, but I was very angry, admittedly. Where I have the altercation with him, that was Section 80B. There are two separate sections. Section 80B is conduct likely to racially harass. And now I received 1 year's jail for that. So that altercation, that interaction with Stanley Elliott Keyser on the street cost me 1 year's jail. I then received a cumulative sentence of actually 11 years for five more counts. So 10 years, 2 years for each count. So he actually gave me 11 years jail.
Wow.
And for each statement, one of the statements was along the lines of your days are numbered. I'm talking about rabbinic Pharisaic Judaism, 2 years for that. That was in the video, and they were the two original charges, just two. Section 80B for the interaction with
Keyser. I've got your notes here from the legislation. I'll just read it out. Mm-hmm. Section 80B, conduct likely to harass. Any person who engages in any conduct otherwise than in private that is likely to harass a racial group or a person as a member of a racial group is guilty of a crime and is liable to imprisonment for 3 years. So that's Section 80B. And Section 77 is conduct intended to incite racial animosity or racist harassment. Any person who engages in any conduct otherwise than in private by which the person intends to create, promote or increase animosity towards or harassment of a racial group or a person as a member of a racial group is guilty of a crime and is liable to imprisonment for 14 years. Wow, that's pretty hefty. Do carry on, Brendan. Yeah.
And that Section 77 is the most serious. That was put forward in direct response to Jack Van Tongeren and the burning down of 12 Asian restaurants. He was a member of the Australian Nationalist Movement.
Right.
So it was actually, as Hitler passed legislation to outlaw the Communist Party, the Labor Party, this is the grand irony, the Labor Party in Western Australia passed legislation to outlaw a far-right party. So I think that's quite significant.
Mm. That is indeed.
That's what they say quite plainly in the Hansard, the debated legislation, why they put that in, because people complained. It seemed very hefty. But anyway, so the statements were, they were the original two charges. Then what happened was I was threatened by the police. I was being harassed. My friends were being harassed. Cars were being damaged, because in the original raid, I told them, look, I'm happy to go to court. Let's talk about the Collins-class submarine, Israeli military contracts, blah, blah, blah. I thought, I'm going to use this as a circus. They knew that.
Yes.
They knew that. So they put the screws on, and I am pretty strong, but I'll tell you, Heywood, I came close to the nervous breakdown. I felt I'd pressed a red button, and they can be pretty nasty, the establishment.
So did they do that by threatening you with heavier sentences, or what was the how did they put the screws on?
Well, they initially, Detective Timothy Richard Paini said, Brendan, when this court case is over, it won't be over, because the only reason they came was because the Jewish community had said that I had threatened them, threatened to kill their children, had been stalking them, blah, blah. It was just garbage, garbage.
Yeah.
I'd never interacted with them on any level at any time. And they knew this. The detectives came on a mental health issue. They believed they were coming after a man who was mentally unstable.
Okay.
I then was interviewed. Detective Manners said, look, you seem all right to us. Maybe you could do things differently. They made me a cup of coffee. They were conciliatory.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, that sounds good. And I thought at that stage, well, this is good. They've got a lot of information I've given them in my DVDs and stuff. They have my laptop. I thought this would be good. And I thought that would be the end of it, that we'd have a town meeting and blah, blah, blah. But it got absolutely out of control. The harassment was intense. So it would take me hours to discuss it.
Okay, we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. I'm talking to Brendan O'Connell, one of Australia's first political prisoners. So we will be back after the break. Don't go away.
All the talk about gun grabbing got you down? How would you like to be the proud owner of a brand new AR-15? Then go to LogosRadioNetwork.com and enter the drawing to win a free Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Support Logos Radio Network by donating just $20 to their fundraiser, and you'll get your name entered into the drawing. Second place prize is a Spikes Tactical AR-15 Lower Receiver, sponsored by CentralTexasGunWorks.com. Every $20 you donate will put your name in the hat. So increase your chances of winning by increasing your donation. Winners must be eligible to lawfully own and possess these items. Please visit LogosRadioNetwork.com for details. If you love all the liberty-minded programming on Logos Radio Network, contribute to the fundraiser and secure your chance to win a Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Like them on Facebook at Zombie Killers LLC. Contest ends February 28th.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner, or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com, or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Truth News Radio, and today I am talking to Brendan O'Connell, who joins us from Perth in Western Australia. And Brendan, of course, went to prison for 3 years under Section 77 and Section 80B of the Racial Vilification Act in Western Australian law. And just a quick question for you, Brendan. Are these specific acts of legislation, are they unique to Western Australia or are they actually federal?
They're a separate Commonwealth, and then the states have their own versions. Some are religious vilification but not racial. Others are racial but no religions. In WA, they have no religious vilification legislation. They all swing around the same point. At the moment, Abbott and co, the Liberal Party, are trying to get rid of the Commonwealth aspect of the legislation, which is conduct likely. Now, the key word is likely to offend, and there's been a lot of talk that no one has the right to be offended, not to be offended, and they want rid of it, which is why they want me in the High Court. They want me there, but they want me to shut up. And until I get a little justice, because it's gone too far, I've been beaten and bashed in jail, threatened. Until I get a little justice, Brendan's not shutting up. So
yeah. Would you say Western Australia has a harsher implementation of the racial vilification?
Oh, absolutely.
Act? Yeah,
absolutely. Look, you've got to understand, Western Australia's run. Look, I've been around the traps. I have a lot of contacts all through Western Australia. In fact, if ASIO wanted to employ me, they'd be doing well. I know a lot of people. And I will tell you something, matter-of-factly, people need to understand, the Catholic Church and the local Masonic Lodge, Scottish Rite Freemasons, run Western Australia. It's a police state, pure and simple. No ifs, no buts. And you've seen some of the worst cover-ups of the Catholic Church and child sexual abuse in Western Australia. In fact, they've been having a little royal commission now. And until people understand there is a clique of people, Twiggy Forrest, Gina Reinhart, mining magnates of all kinds, and they're in with police and financial people, and they run the state. They treat it as their own personal private property. And this is why Western Australia's reputation as a police state and horrendous behaviour of the state police here, I mean, there's corruption everywhere, but it is very bad here, very bad, renowned.
Yeah, and it's something that... if it's not checked, I mean, it will eventually, Australia is heading in that direction anyway. I think maybe Western Australia is a little further along down the path, but the whole country is heading in this direction. And this is why people really do have to stand up against tyranny when it's in its early stages, because if you don't stand up when it's in its early stages, there's no way you're going to be able to do anything once it gets to a more advanced stage. I mean, at the moment, we can still do something about it. But you've faced very, very harsh repercussions for what you have done. And simply, you expressed a point of view, which is an unpopular point of view, because of the lobby, because, as you say, the influence of these lobbies in Western Australia is so strong, you expressed an unpopular point of view, and they turned these laws on you like cannons and gave you the maximum possible penalty. 3 years, although they were concurrent sentences, but it was still, they did give you the maximum possible penalty that they could legitimately give you. I don't think they would have got away with giving you consecutive sentences for all of those offences. Let's just go back to...
Well, I'd correct you, Hewitt. Yeah. I'd correct you. They can get away with anything they damn well please, because you know what? 50,000 people on Facebook complaining, oh dear, aren't they nasty in WA? It doesn't affect them. They don't care.
Right. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, I believe that there certainly is that arrogance, and there's certainly that belief that they can do anything. But, of course, we still do have judges who have some degree of independence. There still is a court system, although less and less. And what I'm finding, and it's very interesting, what I noticed from your case, Brendan, is that part of the lead up to your prosecution was you were exposed on a current affair,
That was the key point when they did that horrendous hit piece on me.
Yeah.
Because the police 2 weeks in came to me and said, look, we're very interested in what you write about. Please just focus on winning the case. And they were sincere. about riding on Israeli intelligence activity, the contracts, the hardware backdoors, the technology companies. They were very interested. And I said, oh, right. And the fact that I can't even show my face and I've been vilified and I can't even get witnesses, they didn't even care. So I said, okay, war it is. And that's when they said, well, when this court case is over, it won't be over. And I thought, oh, so it's war, is it? Mm. War it will be. Mm. And let me be honest, Hewitt, they didn't want to send me to jail. They wanted me to shut up, just say, look, I was angry, go to court and say I was angry, I apologise, I didn't mean to vilify anyone, and there's no way I would have been found guilty. No way.
Yeah, yeah. So they were trying to get you to back down. And just to clarify, the piece on A Current Affair, was that before the trial?
Oh, yeah, that was I pled not guilty in the magistrate's court on May the 19th, and exactly 1 week later, A Current Affair did that horrendous hit piece on May the 26th, 2009.
But see, this is what I see the trend is in Australia, and specifically that show, specifically A Current Affair, is taking over the role of the judiciary. They are finding people guilty on primetime television. And I've just seen, I've been looking at this with some recent stories I've been looking at, and I've been a little bit shocked to see how brazen it is that they basically think they can send anyone to prison. They can just do a show, and they'll sometimes get people on the show as witnesses who they pay $50,000 or whatever, typical fee for an interview, for a big story, you know, and that witness will say pretty much whatever the script is, and the person concerned is pretty well finished by that point. I mean, the person being targeted cannot win because their name's been slandered, and then they go to court, and the courts seem to put up with it. The courts say, well, that's, you know, they sometimes say, well, it shouldn't happen, but it does happen, and it doesn't get stopped.
Hewitt, it's coordinated. It's not an accident. The media work in with the judiciary and the legal system.
Yeah.
They're all friends. They're all friends. They're all down at the Well Club, the Masonic Lodge. They're down at the expensive restaurants. They're friends. All of them, they're friends.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people, and here would, mate, the average person just can't believe it. They'll say, Brendan, I have been privileged to spend 3 years in the jail system and an 18-month lead-up talking to the highest profile cases in this state. And what I saw and heard absolutely destroyed me. I knew it was corrupt, but to be that corrupt, it was just, I asked people to never, ever, ever believe a single word on the television or the newspaper. They don't just exaggerate, they lie. They make things up, literally.
They do indeed. And you know, we've covered some pretty big topics on that issue on this show. And even myself, until I was confronted with some of these things, I found it hard to believe. So
yeah,
you really,
right.
You just have to actually be exposed to it, and then you change, and then you realise. And you realise we're dealing with a much more serious situation. We are really dealing with a situation where our society is degenerating. Our rule of law, our civilization is being undermined, and it's something we've got to do something about, folks. It's not something that you can just sit back and go, oh, you know, that's too bad. No, you've actually got to take some steps here. But anyway, Brendan, can we just continue with sort of the story of what happened to you? Because that's actually very, very interesting. So we had your YouTubes and your confrontation with the guy. Then we had the police. Then we had the hit piece on A Current Affair, and then you went to trial. How did the trial go?
Oh, the trial was a hoot. My lawyer at the time, John Bowger, said it was the most entertaining transcript he'd ever read. John was clearly briefed to limit my defences. I think he's a pretty decent lawyer, and I recommend him.
Yeah.
But no lawyer was going to be able to do this trial properly. What they wanted me to do was just be quiet, just say, sorry, I apologise, I was angry, and people need to understand it. I could martyr myself and say, oh, that's so terrible. Their view is they gave me many opportunities to avoid jail.
Yeah.
My view was, you call yourself a justice system, truth is a part of this. And the key point they didn't want to address was my evidence as to my point of view and my views, that my views were grounded in the public interest. And to do that, I had to present that evidence to the jury, and they would not allow the jury to hear any of it.
We're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt you with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away.
I only have eyes for you.
Soon, store mannequins may be singing that tune. They're being outfitted with cameras to watch us while we shop. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, back with details after this.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights. Say no to surveillance and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This message is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
It's disturbing enough that Big Brother governments use facial recognition technology to identify and track people on the streets. Now clothing companies in Europe, Canada, and America are getting in on the act. So where do they hide the cameras? In the eyes of mannequins. That's right, those glamorous plastic ladies in the display windows may be watching you back. They're called eye seers, and their job is to log the age, gender, and race of passersby, so retailers can devise new schemes to get you to buy. But hang on, aren't mannequins spooky enough already? This is taking weird science to a whole new level. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartPage.com, the world's most private search engine.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Thought that I was doing well, but the truth to you I'll tell. MSGs and GMO really ain't the way to go. There's a better way I've seen. It's called Tangy Tangerine. And we're all drinking Tangy Tangerine. Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine. We're all drinking Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine.
Order Beyond Tangy Tangerine and other great longevity products at logosradionetwork.com by clicking on the Tangy Tangerine banner. Sign up as a preferred customer for wholesale prices or become a distributor and support logosradionetwork.com. So what do you say, Elvis?
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to my guest today, Brendan O'Connell, who went to prison for 3 years in Western Australia under racial vilification legislation. And we are going through some of the events that led up to that and the trial. I'd just like to briefly say, Brendan, you were pointing out there before that the courts, the police were trying to offer you a way out. You decided that you were trying to make a point. You were a political activist. You were making a point. Therefore, you weren't going to back down and say, oh, I'm sorry. And I think that is critical to understand because you were doing what people actually need to do in order to confront the system. And sometimes people do actually go to prison when they do that.
More frequently than people know. Look,
yeah.
I understand now that it's a system, not a legal system. I hate to sound cynical. I'm a bit bitter and cynical, but until you go through the system, you can't understand it. But it's a subtle thing. It's all nudges and winks. The bottom line is they'll assess you and say, well, we believe you this or that. We know what's good for you, and, you know, just do things our way. And if you do, you'll probably be looked after. You'll get away with your shirt still on your back. Yeah. But by God, if you stand up, and especially if you do what I do it publicly. And I said to them, well, if you're gonna call me, because they called me a clown, I said, well, you want to call me a clown? I'll give you a fucking circus. I said it straight to their face. Neville the guard said, how are you? I was trying to get an adjournment so Frederick Tobin could appear, and they knew that.
Right.
I stuck my feet up on the table, told them to bring me a pillow, you're a joke, you're in unlawful court, blah, 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 which is all true.
Okay.
And the guard said, how are you getting away with this? Well, the point was they were not going to delay that. They wanted that trial over and done with as soon as possible.
And so Frederick Tobin, let's just briefly address that. Frederick Tobin is a Holocaust revisionist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were going to bring in the questions you have about the Holocaust as part of the trial.
Is that well, right? That was clearly, I was surprised. That was probably the most sensitive comment, because I made a joke about Holocaust memoirs. And they were really, the indignation that I would dare question that. And they made a big point of it. And when I started quoting about the Holocaust or the narrative and how, and I made some pretty lightweight comments, I could see the judge Wisby getting very, he actually tried to tell me to be quiet. And I said, what are you talking about? This is a part of the trial. I've made these statements. And he didn't like it.
Yes.
And I wanted to give Tobin, again, I was using it. See, they don't mind using a trial to get what they want in terms of the media, but I decided I was going to use the trial to get what I wanted, and they didn't like it.
Yeah,
and one of it was getting Frederick to appear. Unfortunately, he was in the US, and he begged me, look, just be sick or something, and I'll get down there and appear, but it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they were determined to get that trial over and done with. And without going into it now, some of the things they did, they even said that I said the police had deleted my UFO footage off the hard drive. All right.
Okay.
They were trying to make me the racism wasn't working. Let's make him mentally. I said no such thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I think you're very lucid. You're very clear in your mind, and that probably didn't work well for them positioning you as being crazy, and therefore you had to then be prosecuted. So the fact that you remained so consistent, clear, and clearly not crazy meant that. The only other thing they could do was force you to do the time, right? Like you were, that was their only way of pushing this through. Even though they may have preferred if they could have just had you laughed out of court, but they couldn't do that, so they actually had to put you in prison.
Yeah, and it was a lesson to others. My defiance was such that people said they'd never, ever seen a court turn into a circus. And I called him, I said to him at one stage, to Wisby, the judge, and he was shocking. He was like a Chinese communist. He'd been briefed, clearly briefed, and he was clearly in league with the prosecutor, Anthony Ayres. They were clearly organising what to do. They did some very bad things. They cut the trial short. They did all sorts of stuff. But he, they were definitely going after the mental health angle. And all through the jail, they were getting me assessed, Brendan, you're bipolar, you're this and you're that. And I said, look, You have created this. You put me under so much stress. It's no wonder you might feel that. But I said, I have every right to behave like this. When you are doing this stuff to me, I am crying out. You have done stuff to me which is completely unlawful, criminal, and beyond belief.
Yeah.
So and they said, oh, your fearlessness is a sign of bipolar. I said, oh, well, that means William Wallace is bipolar. Every Congressional Medal of Honor winner is bipolar. The use of the mental illness angle by the state is legendary from the Soviet Union, and I saw it attempting to be applied to me. Unfortunately, having a mental health aspect to my degree, my nursing degree, I knew exactly what they were looking for and I knew exactly how to behave. And I had at least 7 assessments and came through with flying colours every time.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it really is interesting that they were trying to diagnose you as being mentally ill. I mean, do you think that they actually were intending then to because if you were mentally ill, that you couldn't have gone to prison for the crime then, surely?
Well,
I'm trying to understand why they were so keen to demonstrate you're mentally ill.
Well, the jail is a mental health clinic for one. It's filled with it's a de facto mental health clinic. Right. They wanted to teach me a lesson. So when I got out, they put racist gets 3 years jail. They wanted me bashed in jail. That's what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I put a warning out. I wrote a letter to the paper and they confiscated it and said, if you try to send one of these again, we'll charge you with stalking. And I said, well, you ring up, excuse my French, you ring up that channel and if they report anything like that again, I swear to God, I will hunt them down. Now, it sounds extreme. They could have had me killed in jail. That was like putting a hit out on someone.
Right.
And I've got a message for the media. You ever try that stuff on me again, I'll make it really personal. You can't get away with that. You are risking someone's life when you do that stuff in some attempt to teach a lesson. And I'll teach the damn media a lesson. And I went up against the media when they were outside on another case after they tried to provoke me when my sister had died. And I got in their face. Now, that made the national episode of A Current Affair because I threatened him physically directly. And I said, if you ever pull that stunt again. And that's all on video. And that made the national A Current Affair. But you won't find that anywhere online. But the media needs to be held to account. They are putting people's lives at risk. They are putting people in jail. And what's more, if the media was doing their job, Harewood, we wouldn't be in the position we're in today.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And that's why we are here today. That's why we're having this conversation.
Mm.
And look, let's get back into the material. You were trying to illustrate, and you made your points to the young man. What was his name again? Stanley
Keyser. K-E-Y-S-E-R. They spell it about 16 different ways and pronounce it many different ways. They're trying to sort of keep him out of the picture a bit to protect him.
Sure. And, you know, you'd made your points there to Stanley Keyser, and all that stuff is still available. We'll put notes, links to that on the site. In the court trial, you brought up the question of the Holocaust. What was your reason for bringing up the issue of the Holocaust?
During the trial, I just viewed it as a chance to air views. It would get it on the record. My views on this thing called the Holocaust are complicated. I believe there was obviously organized persecution of European Jews, clearly.
Okay.
And into Poland and Russia, there was horrendous war crimes committed by the Sonderkommando, the Einsatzgruppen.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the middle. I don't believe there was an organised industrial-scale slaughter of Jews with gas chambers. I don't believe it. There's no evidence whatsoever.
You're not an apologist for the Nazis. You're not saying the Nazis were good blokes.
Well, that's very complicated too. I believe Adolf Hitler was the sanest of them all. He was surrounded by some very loopy people. I mean, really loopy.
Right.
And he allowed, it was a very strange time. On the one hand, you've got war crimes happening here, and then on another part of the front, it was very good. I mean, we could talk for hours on that issue. The bottom line was when you have such a charged atmosphere basing an ideology on race and racial purity, you are going to create, and let's not forget the 17,000 innocent mentally and physically handicapped that were euthanized prior to the war in Germany.
Indeed, yeah.
Now, if someone's going to make an excuse for that, I'm sorry. Adolf Hitler was neither a saint nor was he Satan.
Right,
but we need to have an honest accounting of that time period, and at the moment we simply don't. We don't have an honest accounting.
Absolutely. I mean, I see Hitler as being another one of these manipulated puppet dictators that the West loves to create. And I say the West even though this was Germany, which is the West, but Germany was used in the same way that I believe other states have been used when they want to prop up a dictator so they can then knock that dictator down. We saw it happen in Iraq. I mean, that's a classic case of how this is done. We are going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. I'll continue that thought when we return.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have
have to pry it from our cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
Just like Gonzalez, we're keeping our guns.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Radio. I'm talking to Brendan O'Connell, who did 3 years hard labour in Western Australia under racial vilification legislation, which is pretty harsh and pretty draconian by any standards. And this man has done well to have survived that and still have a positive frame of mind. And I do say that I'm impressed that you've still got some spirit, Brendan.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. It was a difficult time, without question. It's a shock to the system. I would add that they never went out to destroy me per se. They just wanted me to shut up, and I had a minimum security rating. I would have gone to a work farm, but then I had an argument when she told me I could not discuss my case with anyone. And I said, excuse me?
Right.
I can't discuss my case. And I said, and yes, you can't recruit. And I said, what do you mean recruit? What am I, what, the head of the neo-Nazi movement? What are you? I said, what are you being told?
Wow.
And she said, you know exactly what's going on. Miss Kia, her name is. I hope she hears this interview. I still remember her. And I said, you people are mad. You are absolutely stark raving mad. And, of course, up went my security rating and I was sent to medium security Acacia private prison, which is basically maximum with cooking privileges. And they were desperate to get me. Run by the head of Intel was a South African head of South African intelligence called Bill Bosch. He was former South African intelligence.
Right.
And I mentioned to him, did you sign off on any death warrants of black activists? And boom, they shoved me to Casuarina Prison Maximum Security Management Unit, put me in with some of the worst of the worst.
Really? Casuarina, that's quite an infamous prison, isn't it? I mean, that's where they put the worst of the worst, right?
Yeah, that's where I was bashed. I was nearly killed. I was rushed to hospital. I walked around for a month with a badly broken arm. Now, I've done orthopedics. I told them my arm is badly broken. I can't use it at all.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, no, it's just bruised. Then Royal Perth lost the x-ray. Or actually, they won't even admit there was an x-ray. They lost the x-ray films. They took a month later at Albany. They refused to give me a pin and plate, which I required. It's been a massive cover-up, massive.
Wow. I mean, I'd love to know more about all of that, but it's obviously quite a harrowing story.
Howard, I even went to the senior officer and said, you have set me up to be bashed. And he said, don't worry about it. Spoke for half an hour, sent me back to my cell. 5 minutes later, I was beaten unconscious, black and blue. My head was jumped on. My body was jumped on. I have no recollection. I was knocked out.
Wow. And so you believe this was set up by those was part of your punishment.
Yeah, I can tell you who set it up. ASSU Cashman, C-A-S-H-M-A-N. Former military, Freemason, and you'll see it came out in the paper that Senior Officer Jarrett was hugging Troy McCanty, notorious organised crime figure, hugging him, saying, my brother, my brother. McCanty's life's in the line because you don't go hugging senior officers calling them your brother, but he did. Why? Because McCanty's father is a high-level Freemason. All these ex-military are high-level Freemasons, and they are running the prison system. They set me up to be bashed. Assistant Superintendent Security Unit Cashman.
Wow. Brendan, before we... we've got about 10 minutes or so left in the interview today. I'd like to actually run through... to get you to run through what your concerns are about the influence of Israel in Australia today, because I know you've done a lot of research on that, and that's kind of your main shtick. So could you basically give us whatever you consider to be the most important bullet points or things that people might not be aware of about the influence of Israel on Australia?
You went a bit quiet then. I suspect you might have hit a sensitive issue, and I'd like to thank the various government agencies that allow or disallow these Skype calls. I hope you're not going to interfere now. But clearly there are billions of dollars worth of military contracts with by definition, a racist apartheid state. No one would tolerate this within South Africa, and yet we tolerate the Jewish state, and they claim they are a race, not an ethnicity, a race. And yet they have Jew-only roads, Jew-only areas. They treat Israeli Muslims as second-class citizens, the ones that are living within Israel and have paperwork to say they can stay. The place is a cesspit, and yet they have gotten away with this for years, and they are a world leader in technology. They're called a technology juggernaut now. The largest Intel chip fabrication factory outside of the United States is in Israel. It's the high-tech place where they do most of their research and development. They are renowned for putting hardware backdoors in their equipment and spying on friend and enemy alike.
Yes, I'm very interested in the security industry as well, surveillance systems. Australia implements a lot of systems that are built or actually run by Israeli companies.
Yeah, places like Variant did the tube security for the London Tube bombing. They do the Sydney Rail Transit System. They're everywhere. They do RAD Group, R-A-D, RAD Group, run by Zohar Zispel, a graduate of Operation Talpiot, where they trained up military intelligence officers to go out into the world and become entrepreneurs. So that basically they're all military intelligence. All the latest hardware, design, fabrication is run by military intelligence officers. And they are doing government IP, government security, database security. All the servers Google uses are Akamai. That was run by Daniel Lewin.
Akamai, that's a cloud caching service.
Yes, but you look, Google, if you look at when you're watching something load on your web page, you'll say Akamai server.
It's used by all the blue chip corporates. It's the high-end cloud caching service that's used. Are you saying that's actually an Israeli company?
Yes. You know who ran that? Daniel Lewin, the first guy to die on 9/11, the counterterrorism expert who started the company. He'll be in military intelligence. And now it is so convoluted.
Well, that is fascinating, isn't it?
Indeed. And I think people who brought that to my attention was the guy from Southeast Asian News, that Steve Johnson character. He raised that with me. And I'd heard about it but never had a chance to look into it. But that ties in with Operation Talpiot and military intelligence, and it's fascinating. So all the databases, and when I say all, I mean all, banking, finance, security, encryption, military, civil, it's run by Israel. And this is how they control the world, because they have so much dirt on everyone.
Yeah. And one wonders, you know, what is Israel really? Is Israel really just this sovereign state? Or is Israel simply a mechanism of control?
It's a clubhouse.
That's been created by forces, by people that we don't necessarily know who they are, but they've created this thing called Israel. But this thing called Israel implements the policy objectives of something that's far more than just Israel, isn't it? It's global. And as you say, you call it a club?
It's a clubhouse. It's an organized crime outfit. It's got nothing to do with religion, spirituality, Satan. It's got nothing to do with it. It's an organized crime outfit. It has a goal, and it's pursuing that goal. And if we're too stupid to work out that we are the patsies, we're the sheep, and they're the wolves, well, I guess that'll be our problem, won't it?
It will indeed. And it's a problem for any country that... allows its sovereignty to be just taken away in the way it has happened in Australia.
Well, Hayward, I'm sure you remember Abe Saffron, our famous Australian gangster, the Jewish gangster. And, I mean, he had Sir Frank Packer through his string of brothels. He blackmailed people. It was renowned. He had the police commissioner. He had the New South Wales Premier under his thumb. It was said he had Kerry Packer under his thumb. I mean, Kerry Packer was said to be bringing in heroin through his string of cattle stations in the northwest. He was put under the scope of the National Crime Authority. His code name was Goanna. You remember that from the late 80s, early 90s?
Sure.
Murder, drug trafficking, you name it. And he was right in there with Abe Saffron. So it goes deep, and they use Israel, and any intelligence agency uses organised crime. And Kay Griggs goes into this, that she said the Marine Corps are the mob. They do all the hits for the mob. They're ex-military, they're ex-intelligence, they're killing squads. The difference between an intelligence agency and government and organised crime, well, to be honest, there is no difference. They work for the state. Organised crime work for the state.
And, of course, we've seen how Mossad has a passport factory, and this really illustrates what you're saying, that Mossad, in their international criminal enterprises of assassinations, etc., they basically will fabricate passports. Or typically they steal people's passports and then re-author them. And, of course, they love to do that with Australians, don't they? I mean, several Australians were implicated in a high-profile Mossad assassination a couple of years ago. But they operate with impunity in this way. And I think that was at the time when Julia Gillard was Prime Minister. And, of course, Julia Gillard's partner at that time, although there's now a question as to whether he really was anything other than a bit of window dressing for her, but he was Jewish, of course, and I don't think there was any diplomatic storm over Australian passports being used for assassination of who knows what, Mossad enterprises just killing the people they don't like, people haven't paid their bills.
I mean, at least the Australian Federal Police, this is a first, actually went to Israel and made a firm complaint. Now, that's unheard of. No one ever did. And I know for a fact, Hewitt, that Israel is despised by the Australian Federal Police and ASIO. They hate Israel. They hate them.
Yes.
And it's all about military contracts. It's all about defense allegiances and pacts with the United States and so on. That's all that it's about. And I give Julia Gillard credit. Her foreign minister at the time, I can't remember who, actually made a vigorous complaint about it, whereas the now foreign minister, Julie Bishop, the Liberal, I mean, she basically said, oh, good on them. We do it too. Good on them. So, I mean...
Well, yeah, as we've seen with the US drone strikes on Australian civilians, it's all fine to them. Yeah, they just basically green-light the whole thing. I do agree, if anything, it's worse with the current government. Although, to me... Whichever government it is, it's really no different. They slightly different packaging, that's all.
Yeah, I agree. Pretty much. But I think the Labor government has a stronger record on criticising Israel reasonably vocally. But of course, they have a lot of Lebanese and Muslim representatives there. Whereas the Liberal Party just, I'll give it to the Liberal Party, they're honest. They just came out and say, we support Israel no matter what they do. Period. So at least you know what you're getting with the Liberal Party.
Absolutely. Well, look, Brendan, it's been great having you on, and I'm going to stay in touch, but congratulations on standing up for, basic human freedoms.
And thank you, Hewitt, for having me on. I really appreciate it, mate. Cheers.
Absolutely. Well, that's our show for this week, folks. I do hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week. See you then.
To make more definite progress in your walk with God, Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and basic elements of the Christian life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.